Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this program very remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, August 9, 2022. A South Sudanese economic expert says President Salva Kiir should put the right people in the right place to solve the country's economic crisis.
And when you don't produce, when the economic activities are disrupted, then you cannot have an economy growing. The economy will continue to be weakened. So really, South Sudan, our policymakers, our leaders, and also ordinary citizens must pursue the path to peace.
And some Kenyans living in the South Sudanese capital, Juba, cast their votes in the country's elections.
We are happy and we feel we are part and parcel of Kenya.
Yeah. So we are very happy with the government of Kenya for the extension.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese economists say President Salva Kiir's decision to fire the country's finance minister and the governor of central bank may minimize some of the country's economic challenges. Some of the economic experts say the government needs to put the right economists in the right position and step up efforts to restore peace and stability in the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Last week, President Kiir sacked the country's finance minister and the governor of the Bank of South Sudan, but offered no explanation for the firings. Kiir also directed the government to allocate some crude oil revenues to the finance ministry to ensure regular payment of salaries of civil servants. Lual Deng, managing director of the Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says the recent measures undertaken by the president could help address some of the country's economic challenges in the short run, but the government needs to do more to revamp the economy.
They will be able now to stabilize the exchange rate. Once they stabilize the exchange rate, then the next thing is to stabilize the commodity market, whereby goods and services will be brought, even though the dollar will continue to strengthen against the pound.
Kiir also appointed Dier Tong Ngor, a former governor of the central bank, as the new finance minister, but he has yet to appoint a new central bank governor. Deng says unless peace and stability are restored to allow local production across parts of the country, economic challenges will continue.
And when you don't produce, when the economic activities are disrupted, then you cannot talk of an economy growing. The economy will continue to be weakened. So really, South Sudan, our policymakers, our leaders, and also ordinary citizens must pursue the path to peace, sustainable peace. So when you have sustainable peace, then you have economic growth. And economic growth, you will have poverty eradicated.
Akim Ajef, an associate professor of management and public administration with emphasis on economic policy at the board-based Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology, says the measures Kiir has undertaken so far only address the symptoms of South Sudan's economic problems. Ajith also says the Kiir administration should have an independent economic planning institution to master the country's economic plans, citing examples of practices in China, South Korea, and the United States.
If we are having right people in the Ministry of Finance and in the Central Bank, those who are economists, who are real well-trained, those who are good administrators, if we have them there, we'll have a stable economy, even if the country is at war, okay? But if we don't have people with right skills, we will not have a stable economy. And then together with instability, that will even make things worse.
Prices of goods and services have skyrocketed over the past month. A liter of petrol jumped from 450 South Sudanese pounds to 1,100 South Sudanese pounds, and a 50-kilogram bag of maize flour increased from 18,000 South Sudanese pounds to 30,000 South Sudanese pounds. Since last week's appointment of the new finance minister, the South Sudanese pound has slightly gained value against the dollar. While a dollar was exchanging for 700 South Sudanese pounds nearly a week ago, it now exchanges for 550 South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of Kenyans living in South Sudan turned up to cast their votes at the Kenyan embassy in Juba. Many of the voters say the process was smooth. One voter praised the Kenyan government for enabling Kenyans in South Sudan to exercise their democratic rights. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Many of the voters waiting in line at the embassy appeared excited to be taking part in the presidential election. Voter Thomas Sokongo praised the Kenyan government for enabling Kenyans to vote in South Sudan.
We are happy and we feel we are part and parcel of Kenya.
Yeah. So we are very happy with the government of Kenya for the extension, so that we also exercise our democratic rights.
Kenyans living outside the country were not allowed to vote in the contested 2013 presidential election. Voter Lilian Nyambura calls today a historic moment.
We are happy that we've been given the chance, even in the diaspora, and we are happy even for South Sudan to allow us to be able to vote in this country. We are happy. The process in Juba is quite organized. There are no concerns for me because they are organized. You look for your name in the register and you provide your ID and your voting card, and then you go ahead and vote.
Voter Obed Akech said he too was excited to participate in this election.
It was very nice, a good experience, something new for us. People have come and open, jovial. I think we did our best.
Here's what a few more voters had to say this morning at the Kenyan embassy in Juba.
I'm Timothy Barasa. The process was fantastic. We wake up very early in the morning. We exercise our rights. Because we wake up early, when such a open at 6, exactly at 6 a.m., we're on the line, we voted.
My name is Melvin Kevali. Yeah, I feel excited being my first time to vote and being the first time to vote in diaspora in Juba. And I voted well.
Gladys Mwangi, the presiding officer at the Kenyan embassy, says there are two polling stations at the Kenyan embassy in Juba. The polling station at the Kenyan embassy opened at 6 a.m. local time. By 10 o'clock, more than 100 Kenyans living and working in South Sudan had cast their ballot. 977 Kenyans were expected to cast their vote in South Sudan, according to Kenyan officials. Voting was conducted through the Kenyan Integrated Electoral Management System, after which the results will be transmitted to Kenya. The top two candidates, according to the latest polls, are former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and Deputy President William Ruto, as term-limited President Uhuru Kenyatta makes way for a new leader. The other candidates, David Maure and George Wajakoya. The disagreement over election results in 2007 sparked weeks of unrest. An estimated 1,200 people were killed. Another 600,000 others were forced to flee their homes. Many of these voting in Juba said it is important to accept whoever is declared the winner.
The message I can ask Kenyans, you vote, go home. Leave the rest to the IBC people. Do what is right for to all Kenyans.
Whatever the outcome is, and let us embrace it. Whoever is going to be the president is going to be the president for all of us. Let people maintain peace, and let us be a brother's keeper. Let nobody harm any other person. So let people vote and go home. We wait for the results. And whatever the outcome is, even if it does not favor you.
We have the winner, we have the loser. This is the election. It's like football. We have the winner, we have the loser. Not everyone can win. Outcome, we take it.
The polls were open for 11 hours and closed at 5 p.m. local time. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where Sudan's military leader has reiterated the country's commitment to combat all forms of terrorism, extremism, and criminal activities in the region. General Burhan admits Sudan has faced attacks from extreme groups and vows Khartoum's commitment to work with governments in the region to coordinate a fight against all forms of violence. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Addressing members of the Committee of Intelligence and Security Services of Africa, or CISA, at the opening session of a security workshop in Khartoum yesterday, Al-Burhan said Sudanese authorities are committed to combating all forms of violence on the continent, including terrorism and religious extremism inside Sudan. The CISA workshop brought together heads of intelligence and security services across Africa in Khartoum under the theme, The Role of De-radicalization and Rehabilitation in Combating Terrorism. Al-Burhan says, despite ongoing political and security challenges, Sudan's leaders remain committed to restoring stability in the country by enacting new laws and security reforms and signing international agreements. Al-Burhan says Sudan stands firm and remains unshaken in condemning all forms of extremism, violence, terrorism, and all other criminal activities that have been carried out by extremist and terrorist groups. I am here, he says, reiterating our commitment to face any kind of terrorism and fight it with all means. Al-Burhan says, like other countries, Sudan is facing a wave of violent extremism and terrorism. At the same event, Zainab Ali Kotoko, executive secretary of CISA, says the continent has been a target for many extremist organizations who continue to recruit young Africans by taking advantage of poverty, high unemployment, and lack of education. Kotoko says youth-centered approaches will help prevent young people from being recruited into terrorist groups.
Africa is enduring a relentless threat posed by terrorism and violent extremism, which has in recent years increased geographically to all the 5 regions of the continent. Recent statistics indicate that the Sahel region has become increasingly more violent over the past 15 years, with deaths rising by over 100% between 2007 and 2021.
Kotoko says deaths in the Sahel region accounted for 35% of global terrorism-related deaths in 2021. Ambassador Joseph Ochwet, director of Ugandan intelligence and the head of intelligence in the East African region, says terrorism groups such as Al-Shabaab, the Islamic State, the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADM, continue to be active in many societies across the region.
The current threats, which are dynamic and evolving, impel the need to institute initiatives that include preventions to complement the traditional counter-terrorism works. This entails using soft approaches meant to prevent people from being drawn into terrorism or to support terrorism.
Ochoet says in order for a successful de-radicalization to take place across East Africa and the continent in general, it is important to identify why certain communities fall victim to terrorist attacks. CISA was established in Nigeria in 2004 to address security challenges confronting the continent. It is comprised of 54 African intelligence bodies. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Media Watchdog complain about the media environment in Zimbabwe. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do when you are in a bad mood?
I usually would move away from the environment of the agitation and then get a quiet place and pray. Usually when I'm done praying, the agitation and the stress, I get some amount of relief.
Sometimes I decide to sleep and maybe read a novel that can make my mind come like back to normal. Yeah, that's what I normally do.
I rather stay alone and I listen to music, uplifting music, music that has good lyrics that would uplift my spirit.
Okay, when I'm in the bad mood, I sometimes play video games just to make me feel happy.
Actually, I call mom, I talk to her, tell her what's disturbing me. She advises me then. It's a done deal.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Zimbabwe charged two journalists under its cybercrime law in a move. Media Watch advocates say runs counter to global trends to support and promote press freedom. For VOA News, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Police in Harare have charged two journalists from the national paper Newsday under provisions of the country's Cyber and Data Protection Act that cover false data messages. Editor Wisdom Mutsungairi and senior reporter Desmond Chingarande were called in for questioning last week over their coverage of a legal dispute involving local authorities and a memorial park in Harare. Both denied the charge, and Chingarande says he was surprised when police called.
The alleger published the false statement on the internet, but I see this as an intimidation tactic. There were allegations that they are burying people on a part of Glen Forest Memorial Park called Chikomochemute, which is situated at the confluence of Mazoe River without approval from the responsible ministries.
Chingarande says he sought comment from all sides in the story before publishing it. But with the story now part of a police matter, he says he's unable to say much more. Mutsungairi and Chingarande are the first journalists charged under the new provisions of the cybersecurity law that Zimbabwe enacted during the coronavirus pandemic. The Media Institute of Southern Africa says such laws are a means to target journalists and citizens. Tabani Mwere has the regional media watchdog.
These are some of the challenges which we continue to have in Zimbabwe. When we make progress in repealing acts such as the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, then the government clawback using other pieces of legislation to retain elements that will then further target journalists. To have penal or sedition provisions in our statute books that target journalists is so out of sync with the global trends towards the issue of protection and promotion of media freedom and journalistic expression.
Zimbabwe is not alone in passing such laws, said Moyo. Zambia, Eswatini, and Tanzania enacted cybersecurity laws, and Namibia and Lesotho are finalizing similar legislation. Moyo says health penalties, including up to 20 years in prison for those deemed to have shared false news, goes against democratic norms.
This is an anathema to democratic existence and out of sync with our own constitution, which provides for freedom of expression and media freedom, but also violating regional and international conventions and tools.
Ruby Magoshonge, chair of the Zimbabwe Media Commission, a government-appointed body set up to promote and protect journalism, says she is aware of concerns over violations against the medium. Speaking at a conference on safety of journalists organized by UNESCO and media watchdogs in Africa Friday, she called for the government to be more involved in complaints of attacks against the medium.
My wish, my desire, that in future we include our line ministries, you know, so that at least they get the first hand, you know, reports, because they provide the link between ourselves as media institutions, media entities, with the respective governments from our countries across the continent and across Africa, you know, more specifically, because examples have been given where journalists have suffered violence. But if the line ministries are not involved, then it becomes kind of a conspiracy of sorts.
For Newsday journalist Wisdom Mutsungairi and Desmond Chingarande, they are now waiting to hear from the court officials on when a trial in their case will take place. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken gave a speech on the key U.S. strategy for sub-Saharan Africa at the University of Pretoria on Monday, on the first leg of his Africa trip. Kate Barlett spoke with some of the students who watched the speech.
At a joint press conference in the South African capital, Blinken stressed he was not on his three-country tour of the continent in order to counter Moscow and Beijing's growing influence in the region, as has been widely speculated after Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited last month.
Our commitment to a stronger partnership with Africa is not about trying to outdo anyone else.
Blinken spoke, too, about the U.S.'s support of Ukraine, saying Russia's invasion was an aggression against the entire international order. South Africa has remained neutral on the conflict with Russia, its partner in the BRICS group of countries, and abstained from any U.N. votes on the matter, though Pandor said the country abhorred war and would like to see an end to the conflict. However, she said the different approaches by the international community to different conflicts sometimes leads to cynicism about international bodies. She referenced the plight of the Palestinians.
Just as much as the people of Ukraine deserve their territory and freedom, the people of Palestine deserve their territory and freedom. And we should be equally concerned at what is happening to the people of Palestine as we are with what is happening to the people of Ukraine. We've not seen an even-handed approach.
Pandor added that while it didn't come from Blinken, South Africa had experienced pressure from some in the West to align with its policy on Ukraine. She also appeared to criticize America's Countering Malign Russian Activities in Africa Act, which has been seen by some on the continent as a vehicle to punish African countries that have not towed the line on Ukraine.
But in terms of our interaction with some of our partners in Europe and elsewhere, there has been a sense of a patronizing bullying toward you choose this or else. And the recent legislation passed in the United States of America by the House of Representatives, we found a most unfortunate bill.
Bob Wakesa, director of the African Center for the Study of the United States, said Pandor's candid remarks at the press conference showed the closed-door meeting between the U.S. and South African sides must have been a very difficult one.
I think the U.S. Is attempting to figure out how to get the South Africa onto its side. But South Africa is not coming to the party.
Blinken was in Pretoria to launch the new U.S. strategy for sub-Saharan Africa, which focuses on areas such as climate change, trade, health, and food insecurity. During his remarks Monday, he also criticized Beijing for its strong reaction to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. Pandor would not comment specifically on Taiwan, but did say South Africa did not want to be made party to a conflict between China and the U.S. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Pretoria.
Anti-Corruption Bureau in Malawi has arrested its former director for allegedly taking a bribe for a contract to supply food to the country's police service. Don Susie Banda, the former director of Malawi's public procurement agency, was also arrested. Both are expected to be officially charged with abuse of power and could face up to 12 years in prison if found guilty. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The Anti-Corruption Bureau spokesperson Greta Ndala said in a statement, Matemba and Susie Banda were arrested over the weekend for allegedly receiving kickbacks from a businessman, Zunith Sata, to supply about 350,000 food ration packs worth $7,875,000 to the Malawi Police Service. She says investigations established that Matemba pocketed $10,000 as an advantage for the vetting process of the food rations contract, while Susie Banda received 3 million Malawi kwacha, or about $2,900, from Sata's agent, Zun China, to influence Susie Banda to award the Malawi Police Service contract to Sata's company without objection. George Piri is a political science lecturer based in Nzuzu, north of Malawi. He says the arrests confirm how rooted corruption is in Malawi.
It's important that they have arrested the former chief of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, And this gives a picture of how the corruption was in the country. It shows that it had an arm of government, judiciary, legislature, and executive. All these have been found with corruption cases.
The current director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, Martha Chizuma, said last month that in Malawi, a week does not pass without new revelations about corruption. Peter Sambani is a senior legal prosecution officer for the Anti-Corruption Bureau. He says Matemba, who is now on bail, has yet to be formally charged.
The Corrupt Practices Act under Section 42, it requires that for the Bureau to prosecute, we need to obtain consent from the DPP. And as such, we cannot charge the accused person other than you just bring the accused person to court and tell them the reason for their arrest.
However, PD says this is worrying.
Because it makes no sense arresting a person in the morning and releasing by bail in the afternoon. Yes, bail is the freedom of a person, but it shouldn't take years before such a person is brought back to court.
However, Minister of Justice officials say the Malawi government is working to address challenges which contribute to delays in concluding various cases. They cite a recent move by Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera to appoint 7 new High Court judges to clear the backlog of cases in the courts. The arrests of Matemba and Suzi Banda come during Malawi's 20-week-long anti-graft campaign, which Chakwera launched last month. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with a Latuko traditional song from Eastern Equatorial State. To a Lotuko traditional song from Eastern Equatorial State. I'm your host, John Tanza, in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.